If you could change anything about your life, what would it be? Would you get a better job, be in better shape, have more time for friends and family? Doing what works can help. We talk with experts on everything from managing your money to getting over a scrap with your sweetheart. We're your guide to a better life. Now, here's your host for Doing What Works, Maureen Anderson.
How do you make your wishes for your company's transition come true? You start with this hour of radio. That's how. Daryl Anderson, my husband and producer, and I are so eager to talk with the author of a book on this subject. But first, I want to whet your appetite for the subject by saying that according to our guest, 80% of business owners intend to sell their firm to family members or employees. But get this, only 13% complete that transaction. 50% of owners expect they will hand down the business to family members. Yet in reality, this only happens 15% of the time. Why is it so difficult? Well, that's a question for Scott Hunsaker. He's the author of Heroic Ownership, Build Your Team, Plan Your Exit, Create Your Legacy, a book that will be out very soon. And we'll tell you more about how to stay updated on that a bit later in the program. But to give you a little bit of background on Scott, he had his own credit card and car at age 16, not because he was a spoiled kid, but because he was buying things and helping his dad, a very successful entrepreneur, run his companies. After Scott grew up, he worked for a bank for 5 years and eventually went to work in one of his dad's businesses. His current venture, Ardent, is built to help other businesses like himself figure out how to do what he did, seamlessly transfer ownership of their companies someday to their employees. It's a pleasure to have you with us, Scott.
Well, thank you for having me, Maureen.
Why is it so difficult to transfer ownership of your company to the people you want to transfer it to?
Well, 66% of businesses close their doors when the current leadership team leaves. Just add another statistic to your introduction. And I think the reason that that is so large isn't because we don't know how to do it. It's that today's owners are so busy working in the business, whacking the mole every day, that they forget to work on the business. They think they can come back to it at the end of the career when time permits and develop that transition plan. And often life reaches up and grabs us, either with an unexpected event or we find ourselves at the end of our journey and we don't have a plan in place. And this isn't something you can do overnight. This takes years to transfer that institutional knowledge and business savvy to the next team so they can carry on your legacy and carry on that firm into the future.
It sounds like the same reason people have trouble with end-of-life planning. They just don't want to think about it.
Well, I think we all think we're immortal.
Yep.
And none of us have figured that out yet.
I haven't.
Absolutely.
What changes when you work with companies? How do you snap them out of this denial?
You know, I think going back to what I mentioned earlier, the key to creating a path forward is to create as many options as possible. We can't predict the future. So fundamentally, I think if we come up with a strategy about transferring that institutional knowledge and business information to the next generation of leaders, it's going to accomplish a couple of different things. First of all, if it's your plan to sell to a third party, I think it's going to make it worth more to a third party if the company has the ability to carry on without you. Second of all, if it's your intention to sell to a third party and you don't want to hang around for 3 to 5 years to transfer the institutional knowledge at that point, having this plan and having this foundation in place is going to give you the freedom to be able to do things you want after you create that legacy event. But, you know, when I talk to CEOs and I ask them what their definition of success is for their transition, you know, usually that knee-jerk reaction is money. You know, we all want to be perceived as making a good business decision, and often the ruler we use is money, a return on investment. But then think about if you're a founding owner. How important is the legacy? how important is are the employees? I mean, my employees were some of my best friends. I was at their weddings. I was at their kids' baptisms and those types of things. How important are your customers? So if you sell your company to a third party, what happens to your legacy? What happens to your employees? What happens to your customers? A lot of times that's just a big question mark. So transferring or continuing the leadership of your organization internally may help you come up and meet that definition of success you might have with regard to legacy, with regard to employees, and with regard to customers. And I would even suspect you can meet your goals and objectives on the money category, too, if you take a thoughtful, knowledgeable approach to it.
Tell us about the first business you sold.
So the first business I sold was actually in the recreation industry. We actually, it was a swim and tennis recreation facility. And we transferred that. We actually closed that business down. It had kind of reached its end of its life, if you think about it. We had, in the 80s and 90s, we had both spouses working, both parents working. We started having the program kids, the idea of just hanging out at a family recreation facility. It kind of moved past it. Now we were doing water parks and we were doing big thrill type of an events and opportunities. So we actually went into the real estate business and converted that into real estate, whether it could be commercial or residential.
What was it like to sell it?
Well, actually, I would say it was very heartbreaking because, you know, these were places where I had grown up, where I learned a strong work ethic, where I developed the skill set that I had in my life to carry me forward. And that's not available to my kids. It's a real hole in my life and being able to continue the legacy of the family. And so as I started getting exposed to other businesses, it really became imperative upon me to figure out how do we keep this legacy going so we're not kicking these companies to the curb. You know, again, going back to that 66% number, if we're closing 66% of these companies when the current leadership team leaves, what's that doing to our communities? What's that doing to our families? What's that doing to our industries? I mean, I find a number of industries where, you know, they might have a distribution network or things like that. And if these people don't have a succession plan, these companies may find themselves a threat of survival if some of their key stakeholders aren't available or aren't around and that next generation isn't there.
It tells me all over again how important a great leadership team is to the company. It just becomes the face of the company.
Right. And, you know, founding owners particularly sometimes aren't really good at building that team because the reason they're successful is they're really good at their job. They're really good at the task or creating that deliverable. But there's a big shift for those leaders in order to be successful and carry on, and that's stop doing and start teaching and coaching. And that's a big difference because a lot of times it's easier. I can just do it quicker myself. Have you ever heard somebody say that? And every time you're doing that, you're robbing from the future to maybe pay for the present. You're preventing that person's ability to step up and carry on and building capacity for the future. So sometimes you just have to keep reminding yourself about what your goals and objectives are in the moment.
I'm borrowing from a humor columnist, but it's unbelievable, really, how much more time it takes to guide your kid through the cleaning of that kid's room than it would be to clean it yourself. And yet it's that kind of pain day after day that raises good kids.
Right. You know, I was actually having a conversation about a family issue with some close friends yesterday. And one of my friends said, you know, Scott, as parents, our job is to teach our kids not to need us. And that may even apply in the business world. As a business leader, it's our job to develop our team so they don't need us. You know, one of the tests I'll ask the CEO is I'll say, hey, can you go on a vacation without a cell phone or a laptop and be disconnected for 3 weeks and come back and everything's still humming along? That kind of tells me something. Peter Schutz was the CEO of Porsche. And he actually made a statement once. He goes, you know, what do? Leaders manage change. And I would submit, and I'm quoting him, I would submit that if you didn't show up to work tomorrow or the next day, the company would continue to hum along until what? Until change occurs. And so our job as leaders is to manage change, and our job to prepare the company for the next generation of leaders is to teach that leadership how to manage change, to give them that institutional knowledge and business savvy, and give them the understanding and the information they need to know to anticipate the future and make good decisions.
When you ask these CEOs if they could go 3 weeks without being in touch with their office by cell phone, how many say they could?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Sometimes I get the answer before I ask the question. They said, you know, I took a two-week vacation. I came back, and sales went up. And my marketing plan next year is going to be to come into the work less. And there's actually a little bit of truth in that, because sometimes we prevent people from doing what they're good at because we're so busy giving them directives as opposed to letting them make their own business decisions. And that is a little tongue-in-cheek. But I think, particularly, again, for founding owners and small business owners, that's a big deal. You know, let's define small business for a second, if I could.
Please.
According to the federal government, a small business is a company with less than 500 employees. I think that's a pretty big small business, but that's how we define it. And small businesses represent 99% of the employer firms in the United States. They represent 69% of net new private sector jobs and 49% of private sector employment. My point is this, we're a really big deal. And if we can't get this right of keeping these businesses and keeping that institutional knowledge and keeping that art and craft in our industries still relevant, I think it's going to significantly negatively impact our communities, our country, our economy, and everything associated with it.
You make a very good case for that. I'm not surprised. Scott Hunsaker joins us today, author of the upcoming Heroic Ownership, Build Your Team, Plan Your Exit, Create Your Legacy, a topic it's high time we covered on the show, and we are doing just that on Doing What Works. Back with Doing What Works. I'm your host, Maureen Anderson, kind of a fan of the comedian Jerry Seinfeld, who says that bedtime has become quite the production in households across America. And I bet a lot of you can relate to that. It's all this quality time with your kids and the stories and the rituals and the this and the that. And it's what some people would refer to as helicopter parenting. My guest on the show today had what I think he would say is the opposite of a helicopter dad. Scott Hunsaker, author of Heroic Ownership, Build Your Team, Plan Your Exit, Create Your Legacy, cut his teeth in business at the feet of his father. And Scott, you say your dad was a role model, but maybe not in the way we have come to look at role models these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Dad was one of those people that always gave me enough rope to hang myself, I guess you could say. My father was a brilliant visionary. He had the ability to look 20, 30 years out into the future. He was a consummate entrepreneur. He started over 25 companies. But he was a very controlling leader, and he lost both of his parents at a very young age. His father passed away when he was 5. His mother passed away when he was 14. So he was very self-reliant. Do you remember those dictaphones with those micro-cassette recorders?
I do.
You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Yeah. He would wear one of those out about every 6 months because he was just a machine gun fire of memos. There were all these directives coming out of his office, telling us what to do and how to get things done. And while that was very helpful, there were a couple lessons learned I got out of that. One is that many people in the company maybe didn't have to think because they were just being told what to do. I had the great privilege of being able to go home at night and have dinner with them, and I kind of got the rest of the story. You might suggest I even got the love because I got to ask the whys. I got to understand his thinking and understand how we you know, resolve some of those directives about how to go forward. But the other thing I observed is what happens when that person writing the memo is gone? What does that have more or less value to the company, to a third party? Does that give more or less value to the team members to be able to carry on? Does that give the confidence for the team members to be able to risk their financial future and invest in that company to carry it on? And that's where I started to realize maybe that disconnect about giving directives versus about building a team that can accomplish anything.
I'm going to be contrarian for just a moment, though, and say if he's keeping copies of all those directives and they're general enough, that would be one heck of a, what do they call this, standard operating procedure manuals.
Right, but all that information comes with a born-on date. So, yes, it's going to be valuable until it's not. Think of it this way. You know, I've seen a CEO kind of turn, you know, hypothetically to the next leadership team and go, here's my company.
Yep.
It's perfect. I spent my entire life creating this company. Now, here it is. Don't change a thing and don't screw it up. Now, is that a viable option or a viable plan for success going forward?
It works with franchises.
I would actually take exception with that.
Please do.
Aren't those franchises continually reinventing themselves? Isn't that franchisee or franchisor continually writing the memo about how to keep that product fresh and current and going forward?
Yeah, based on that buttermilk chicken nugget thing from McDonald's, I guess so.
I mean, McDonald's is constantly reinventing itself every year.
Yeah, good point.
Although I keep seeing the McRib thing about every 3 years. I'm not quite sure how that
won't die.
But, you know, the other way I see CEOs interact with the team is go, here it is. Here's my company. This is the best I could make it. And I trust you to use it as a foundation for your own success and make it even better. And so, you know, that's kind of one of the key takeaways. In my best day, I was successful at maybe hiring the right person for my company 60% of the time. If I'm only that good at 60% of the time, what makes me think I'm going to be any better at picking the next leaders? So I would submit one of the ways of creating a successful strategy for going forward is create that leadership team bench and let the cream rise to the top. So instead of trying to pick the future leaders, let them become self-evident and natural leaders in your organization.
We'll talk more nitty-gritty next on Doing What Works.
Thanks for listening to Doing What Works and to our radio affiliate partners like WCAZ in Carthage, Illinois.
Listening to Doing What Works. Shortly before our daughter Katie graduated from NYU, she gave us this report on a conversation with a friend who I think had graduated a year earlier than her. She had asked this friend how adulthood was, and the friend was like, not that great. And it made me wonder if some of it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. For example, what are your kids learning about the world of work by listening to your dinner conversations? I remember being little and being so enchanted by the stories my dad would come home with from the office. I mean, it sounded like that office was just filled with villains, very bad people, according to my dad. But the way he told the stories made it sound like adulthood was going to be very interesting, too, in a good way. And I can't wait to dive into this aspect of things with my guest on Doing What Works today. His name is Scott Hunsaker. He's the author of an upcoming book, Heroic Ownership, Build Your Team, Plan Your Exit, Create Your Legacy. It's about the successful transition of your company to the people you want it to go to. And Scott, what strikes me about you working with your dad as you were growing up and getting all these directives from him because he was such a controlling person, but then being able to ask him at dinner the why behind those directives. I find that aspect of things fascinating because it sounds like he was willing to answer your questions, and the whole why are you doing what you're doing can be a loaded question if you're not talking with someone who has an open mind. If they take that why as a threat or a statement on their competence.
You know, we can tell our kids all day long not to touch the stove because it's hot. But sometimes we don't learn until we touch the hot stove and react in pain. And that becomes seared in our mind that we don't want to touch the hot stove. So in the business world, I think that's true too. We can take that wise counsel and we can take those lessons learned, but we have to apply them and develop our own skill set and develop our own experiences of which to build the capacity to carry on. I actually have a client right now on the West Coast who told me a year or two ago, he goes, you know, Scott, I don't want my kids coming into the business because I want them to go out and earn it and learn it on their own. And that's maybe part of that teaching and parental role of being able to do that. But you know what? I think that's missing an opportunity to really help our kids because more than 90% of new startups fail. But what if we allowed that child, like my dad did? You know, when I approached my father to buy his company, I said, you know, Dad, I can't be you, but it would be such a privilege and honor to take what you've created and use it as a springboard for my own success and to take it in a very different direction. And he was very supportive of that. And it was really his ability to let me develop and flourish in my own style to make it successful. A lot of times I've seen CEOs, parents say, you'll never be good enough to do it.
Oh.
And very rarely are they able to overcome that.
That's awful.
Well, you know, when I was in the banking world, I would say I saw that a lot because it's really up to the family patriarch to allow to let go. I see a company today right now, it's actually mentioned in the book a little bit, I disguised it some, but you know, this person's been in the business, they're 80 years old, they're still having the Rolodex, they still have a secretary that's doing shorthand. They got past the rotary phone to a push-button phone now, but you know, it's still at 1950s style. And the kids have expressed interest over time about coming into the business. And in general, I would say the family patriarch's response was, you're not good enough, you're not ready. Well, these kids have gone on to become very successful in their own ventures. But this is a really great company. It's doing well. It's successful. But, you know, the clock's ticking because there isn't anybody there to pick it up when the current owner leaves. This owner had a major medical issue, should have been out of work for 2 or 3 months. He came back in 2 or 3 days just because it literally couldn't run without him. Is that the definition of success we're looking for as leaders today?
Are these people afraid that the kids will outshine them?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. But I think today what we can do is we can kind of create our own definition of success. In this particular case, I think that company is so much a part of that person's persona, image, and self-worth that I think it may be less about the kids. It's more about if they're not showing up to work every day, they're going to lose a piece of themselves. That's just who they are.
Yeah.
Scott, I do a radio feature myself that's aimed at the farming community. And as you're probably aware, most of the farms in this country are family farms. Many of them are multi-generational. One of the things that I found in covering the agriculture industry and farming in particular is that there have been so many problems passing the farm down from one generation to the next, one of which is that the oldest generation is so unwilling to let go. You were just talking about that.
Yeah.
And you would have a son or a daughter, perhaps, who is 50 years old, working for a father who is 80 years old, and the father has never allowed this middle-aged child to take a management role or understand how to take a management role. So they're just totally unprepared when the old man keels over and everything goes to heck.
Yeah. There's another dynamic that's almost opposite of that, and that's where you see a parent that's very eager to share and bring them in and give them an opportunity. And the kid looks at it and goes, you know, Dad, I've been watching you work, you know, half days for the last 30 years. What I mean by half days is that's 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., 7 days a week. And I just don't want to work that hard. You know, I don't want to come into the family business. That's not what it is for me. So it's that dynamic, and maybe the family business that you were talking about in the farm world is that those new kids are going to do it different. They're going to kind of recreate that experience and how they get things done in their own image. And I think one of the real important lessons for the family patriarch is to let them do it. Let me give you a quick little story.
I tell you what, Scott.
So my dad,
Scott, I hate to interrupt you again. I guess that's part of my job description. I'll never make peace with it, though. Let's save your story for after a break so I don't have to cut you off partway through the story. This is Doing What Works. You're listening to Doing What Works, and if you've noticed what I have noticed about people, sometimes there's a big difference between what they say they want and what they do. And I think that is at play when we talk about the transition of a business from your hands into the hands of the people you supposedly want it to go to, employees, family members, whomever. Scott Hunsaker is the author of Heroic Ownership, Build Your Team, Plan Your Exit, Create Your Legacy. That book will be available soon. If you want updates about it, you can follow Scott on Twitter at Ardent Group STL, or you can Google Heroic Ownership, or you can go to ardentgroup.com. If all those prove to be unfulfilling, write to me at maureenanderson.com and we'll get you all set up with a way to reach Scott and find his book. Anyway, Scott, you were about to tell us a story that illustrates the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, so when I bought my father's company, I realized that I couldn't be his partner, but I could honor his legacy. Dad was always revered and respected and always had an office, but he would come into my office from time to time and he closed the door. And go, what are you doing? This is the craziest idea I've ever heard in my life. What? Why do you think that this is good? And we would walk through all the thoughts about why we were implementing this particular item or procedure or something like that. And he'd kind of look at me and roll his eyes and go, okay. And he'd open the door and walk down the hall and he would say, that's the best darn idea I've ever heard of in my life. You know, he always had my back. He didn't always agree with me, but he always had my back. And that was a huge gift because he didn't steal my passion. He didn't steal my power or my interest in being able to go forward. And even though that had a tremendous impact on me, I've had the privileges of leading 8 companies. And when I work with my new partners that are now the leaders, I find myself taking that lesson from my father and reapplying it. For example, there's a gentleman that's running our engineering company now, and I'll go into his office. I go, what are you thinking? And he'll share his thoughts with me, and I'll open the door, and I'll say, that's the best darn idea I've ever heard in my life. And so it's our job, I think, as leaders to pay it forward and have that respect and have their backs. It's a tremendous privilege to be a business leader. We impact a lot of people's lives. And we have to have each other's backs to create that foundation on which others to build.
Yes, because if you hire correctly, you're hiring people who are smarter than you. And I think one way leaders sabotage things is they hire people smarter than them, but then they won't let them be smarter.
Right. And not only that, I think sometimes we covet information. For example, my father once said, don't write anything down. Somebody might take it.
Oh,
you know, General McChrystal has a quote that says, you know, knowledge is not power. Sharing knowledge is power. So are we as leaders and parents giving our team members or our children the information that they need to make knowledgeable decisions so they can be successful? So we're not setting them up for failure.
Well, you just reminded me of something I did write with our daughter, I think accidentally, but I always gave her the impression, because it was true, that I was constantly learning from her. And now that she's grown up and is kind of a cool grown up, I think, well, gosh, that had something to do with it. The whole time she was growing up, here's her mom, like, taking notes on how to live. That just seems like a very self-esteem building deal.
You know, when you build a relationship as opposed to writing memos, I think you're really creating a new relationship and a new capacity and power to be able to accomplish things. You know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So if you're developing these strong working relationships and we're empowering each other and encouraging each other and brainstorming together, I think we're opening a whole lot more opportunity for a successful future, whether in our family lives or in our business life.
I want to go back to something you said about your dad telling you not to write things down because somebody could steal them. And it reminds me of the whole hoarding of ideas thing. And what I have learned is that the people who share the most, who aren't afraid of people stealing their ideas, they seem to have a limitless supply of ideas. And I think the sharing comes before the limitless supply. That's where the limitless supply comes from. This is getting sort of woo-woo, but it's almost like the universe says, okay, you're going to be generous. You're never going to be without ideas. Versus if you feel like you've got to keep them from other people, the universe says, hey, forget it. We're just going to cut you off because you don't know how this works.
We got past the sharing information thing pretty quickly and became very astute and efficient. Let me ask you a question. Where do we store most of our business information?
In our heads.
Where's the worst place to store business information?
In our heads.
There you go.
Yeah.
And that was something that became self-evident to us very early in my leadership tenure. And so we developed a very strong process of creating what I'll call a master toolbox. And that's where we store all this institutional knowledge as it's relating to the company. Our goal was, is how can we give all the information that's going to be necessary for a young person that has an opportunity to lead and affect great things inside the organization, how can we give them all the information they need to make knowledgeable decisions in the company and represent the company maybe after they've only been there 2, 3, 4 years? And so it took us years to put this together. But once we got that in place, it really created a powerful vehicle for us to effectively lead change in our industry and our company and be successful.
When we come back, we're going to take at least one example from that toolbox that Scott lays out in his book, Heroic Ownership, and we're going to make you want to buy the book. How does that sound, Scott? We'll be back with Doing What Works in just a moment.
Remember to listen to this station each week at this same day and time for Doing What Works with Maureen Anderson.
Welcome back to Doing What Works. Maureen Anderson, your host. Daryl Anderson, my husband and producer. So much information we're imparting on the show, courtesy of our guest, Scott Hunsaker, who has written a book about how to avoid the pitfalls of transferring ownership of your company to the people you want it to be owned by when you're ready to get out. Scott, we only have a few minutes. We've stayed mostly on the theoretical realm, which I think is great. You have to motivate people with the why. But now let's give them at least one meaty, toolboxy thing that makes them see just how much they'll get out of your book.
So when I bought my father's company, I thought I had bought one company, but I'd actually bought three companies. I bought the Richard Company, the Joe Company, and the Dale Company. Because depending upon who did the work, you got a different deliverable. A contractor could look at our drawings and figure out who did it. So we didn't have, in this particular case, the Councilman Hunsaker way. We had three different ways. So is that a good thing or a bad thing? I would submit that it's limiting our ability to go forward if everybody has a one-off way of doing it. So it had been on our to-do list to create a master specification. We were an engineering firm, and we had never gotten around to it. So when I bought the company, we locked our engineering team into a room. It was theoretical. And in about 90 days, I said, we're going to come up with one way of doing things. You know, there was arm wrestling, there was fighting, theoretically. But what we said is everybody has an opportunity to present their best ideas, and collectively we're going to pick the best ones, and then we're going to all agree that, that's the way we're going to be. We're going to walk together in unison, kind of create that all-for-one, one-for-all type of an approach. Now, before we did that, it probably took us 5 days to put together specifications because you're cutting and pasting and everyone's a one-off. But now we have everything in one place, and now we could put that specification together in a half a day. Now, that was the first process, and then we did it again and again and again, and it took us 5-6 years to put that master toolbox together. But if you go down this path, let me offer you a word of caution. You know, we dramatically improved our ability to create a specification, but we were spending about 20% of our time those first years creating that master toolbox. So if you measure success in weeks or months, this could be a recipe for failure because it's not going to get you where you want to get as quickly as you want to get there. But if you measure success in years, it was a tremendous benefit for us. We were able to grow the size of the company tenfold with only increasing our personnel by a factor of fourfold. And using these tools and able to do more with less was our way of creating a successful business model for the future.
What is the one thing you hope people will remember from listening to this hour of radio with you, Scott?
The biggest deliverable I'd like your audience to walk away with is your legacy starts today. You can't wait for tomorrow. You can't do it next year. You can't do it next month. It's today, and we have to take action today because we have a finite amount of time, and I think part of our privilege and our responsibility as being business leaders is to be thoughtful, caring, and responsible for what we're doing with this great organization we've created for the next generation, because if we miss, we could negatively impact. Think about how many lives we touch. It's not just our employees. It's just not our customers. It's not just us. It's all of our families. The decisions that we make are going to have a significant impact on a number of people, and that's a tremendous privilege, but also responsibility.
Quickly, I think that's one reason it was so touching, your story in the book about how kids would be sitting on their parents' laps when all these papers were getting signed.
Yeah, when we did our ownership transition, we had the mom and dad there because they all had to sign the legal documents. What we weren't ready for were the kids. The kids showed up. And it was it's a little sentimental for a CEO to say this, but it was a tremendous privilege to see the entire family there. And it was literally a visual representation of transferring the legacy of Councilman Hunsaker from one family to another and from one generation to another. And I was very, very proud.
Lots of great, big, life-changing legacy-building advice in heroic ownership. Build your team, plan your exit, create your legacy. You can learn more at ardengroup.com. And we want to thank Scott Hunsinger very much for joining us on this edition of the show. As always, if you want more information about our programs or about anything else we're up to at Doing What Works, please check out my website at maureenanderson.com. And that will do it for this edition of Doing What Works.
This broadcast of Doing What Works is copyrighted by North Shore Productions. To learn more, please visit maureenanderson.com.